The Talk of the Northwest, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. It is 3 minutes past nine on this Thursday, the 19th of February. It's very good to have you listening. How are you keeping? I hope you're very well indeed. Right, we're here with you for the next 2 hours. We've got lots coming up on the programme. We've got an interview with the Agriculture Minister. He's up in the region launching a new pilot scheme, but we talked to him about his plans for tackling TB, the scourge for many farmers, and also to the bald bear sit-in. And what's his views on that? And does he think, you know, farmers sitting in there will get their way? We also have that conversation with Lisa McGee, the creator of The Dairy Girls, about her career and her new Netflix hit. That's coming up and so much more besides. Business Matters too, I think. We have a preview today. It's Thursday, isn't it? Right, we want you involved in the conversation throughout the morning. 086 60 25000. That's WhatsApps and texts. 086 60 25000. We get through them all. We read them all and we're trying to get out as many as we can on air. And we certainly do get most of them out on air. If you prefer to give us a call though, Caroline Orr, researcher and producer, 07491 25000, ably assisted by Shannon Wilkins. And if you want to email, it's comments at highlandradio.com. Just a word on the podcast, by the way. It's available for you when we go off air on highlandradio.com. But it's now available for you, and it can be easier sometimes, though we love the traffic on the website, on Spotify and iTunes. So if you search The Greg Hughes Show, Highland Radio, and maybe give us a like or subscribe, or even a rate, it would be really appreciated. And what happens is you get an update as soon as a new podcast is provided to you. So it makes it really convenient for you when you're out and about or wherever you are, or however you choose to listen to us. And of course, if you're listening to that podcast or indeed the overnight repeat, there was a slight tech issue for a couple of nights, but hopefully it's good tonight. Well, then feel free to text or comment if you wish, and we can pick those up and carry them into the next live show. So you're interactive, whether you're live or pre-recorded. You get where I'm coming from. Let's look at the papers this morning. More than 20 years after the Lough Swilly Preservation Group won a historic battle to get a ministerial order overturned on a five-acre site for oyster cultivation near Rye Bridge, Rathmullen, substantial new planning applications have been made to cultivate mussels and oyster beds in Lough Swilly. The main locations are at Kinnegar Head, Macamish Fort near Otway Golf Club, and at Ball Green in the Lochside, Remelton. Other locations are close to Buncrana and the Big Isle at Manorcunningham. The application covers 750 acres. We understand, the paper does, that a number of objections are already being considered with references to a landmark decision of the Aquaculture Licensing Appeals Board in 2005. More details on that story on the front of and inside that paper today. The Donegal News: people are being failed. A priest in the Northwest has called on practitioners to have a greater understanding of people who present to them with mental health difficulties. The priest made his comments at the recent funeral of a young woman who had been living in Donegal prior to her tragic passing. The woman and her husband had moved to Inishowen in the last number of years, addressing mourners. The clergyman told of how the young woman and her husband had shared a life together for 22 years. The priest spoke of how the couple had many happy moments, enjoyed holidays abroad and loved being at home together. And on it goes. But the core message from the priest there, which is covered, of course, further inside the paper in the article, is that people, he says, are being failed. The Derry News this morning: Derry City and Strabane District Council has confirmed Derry's St Patrick's Day Spring Carnival Parade is going ahead in spite of issues, in inverted commas, relating to the North West Carnival Initiative, the parade's main organising body. The Derry News understands a number of creatives previously involved with NWCI have left the group in recent weeks and retain intellectual property rights in terms two items which they previously designed. On to the Nationals now, and this is a story focusing on a certain area of Ireland, but I would imagine that if the same level of scrutiny happened across the counties, we might see a similar picture. More than 200 children being treated by the Child and Adolescent Mental Health Services in North Kerry were at risk of potential harm, an independent review has found. The HSE yesterday published a review into the service which raised concerns about high rates of prescribing of medication and low rates of therapeutic intervention. So what they're suggesting here is perhaps too keen to prescribe drugs when counselling might benefit. The report conducted by Dr. Colette Halpin, a consultant child and adolescent psychiatrist, examined the care of 374 children who were active on the North Kerry Calms team database in November 2022. Of these, 209 cases, 56%, were found to be at risk of potential for harm. In 12 files, the potential for harm was considered to be minor, and these families received a letter outlining the fact. What a lot of the children were on drugs for long periods of time. Some on drugs for long periods of time when it was short-term medication that was perhaps the better thing to be prescribed. That's focusing on North Kerry. Maybe you've got stories relating to our region. Feel free to share them on 086 60 25000. The Competition Authority is recommending the removal of barriers to Uber and Bolt fully entering the Irish taxi market in response to consumer demand. So this would be a radical shake-up of taxis in this country. Obvious problems, and I didn't get an opportunity to read all of the article. It's very expensive for a licensed taxi person to keep their taxi on the road in terms of the license and every other hoop they have to jump through. Deregularizing it might be good for us because you could have people, you know, just doing a bit of taxiing in the evening, providing the car meets all the standards and they do pay something of a charge. But where does that leave all of those taxi drivers, you know, with the big license costs and all the money that they've invested into their businesses to allow sort of lower reg competition into that market? It's all well and good when everyone's looking for a taxi at 11:30. But a lot of these people are, you know, doing 8, 9, 10 hours all of the time, and they're your regulars. And then you get people that could drop in and cherry pick. Maybe that's what's needed. I'm not saying what's right or wrong, but I understand that this is going to be tough news potentially for some. In a move that will infuriate the taxi industry, the Competition and Consumer Protection Commission is recommending that all drivers be allowed to use their own cars to provide taxi rides without needing a speciality license. This would mean they would be regulated only for safety and service. Uber, which has been operating in the Dublin market since 2014, is not allowed to use private cars to pick up passengers as it does in other countries. The CCPC says the status quo is holding back innovation in the industry and means a lack of choice for customers. And we heard only from a lady not so long ago who effectively her and her friends can't go out because there's no taxi services in their area. What this means is a man or woman in that area with a car that's, you know, fit for purpose could just do runs between 10:30 and 12 at night. And that could just be their weekend job. Is that fair on the wider taxi industry? Maybe you are working in the taxi business. If you just want to talk about that, feel free to get in touch. 086 60 25000. We've thrown out the conversation of school meals on this programme, and really, to be honest with you, not that we're looking for it. We don't get an awful lot of negativity. I've asked the question on a number of occasions to get a sense of whether or not you're happy with the school meals programme, and for the most part, it seems to be that you are. But at least a third of hot school meals do not meet basic nutritional standards, Social Protection Minister Dara Cleary said yesterday. This is in the Irish Daily Mail. TDs, parents and others have raised concerns about the nutritional value of such meals, with celebrity chef Darina Allen comparing them to airline food. A dietitian appointed in September assessed 400 meals offered under the Free School Meals programme to primary schools across the country. She assessed the meals for 5 basic nutritional values out of a total of 16 different nutritional elements issued to meal providers as guidance. Mr. Cleary said a third of the meals offered did not meet at least 3 of the 5 basic nutritional standards. Okay, they might be doing better at school than some of us are doing at home. It's very hard nowadays to get Well, I was the same. I was going to say it's very hard to get them to eat nice food or good food for them, but I was the same. I was useless at eating that stuff. Right, the Irish Farmer's Journal. The only difference is when I was growing up, and this is not like I used to walk to school on my bare feet, but this is the truth. You know, you ate, there was seven of us in the house, and you ate what was made. And if you didn't eat what was made, well, then you didn't eat. You could probably grab a slice of bread and butter or something, but you either ate what was made or you didn't. I've seen myself, and I'm guilty of this, you know, making three different foods in an evening. Not as much now, but in the past I did. Maybe I was trying overcompensating. I don't know what was going on. But anyway, you know, so I have to take a bit of blame for the fussy eating myself, I suppose. Irish Farmers Journal. Farmers are being warned around the trading of entitlements this year, as the current payment system could face the chop post 2027. Announcing the opening of the basic income support for sustainability applications window, the Department of Agriculture noted that the current cap is due to cease at the end of 2027. Enoch Burke's back in the papers. The Board of Management of Wilson's Hospital School in Westmeath wants to be joined as a notice party in jailed teacher Enoch Burke's latest High Court action over the membership of an appeals panel, which will hear the appeal against dismissal from the school. Mr. Burke has been jailed for contempt of court for a number of periods, totaling almost 600 days, because he's repeatedly trespassed on school property in breach of court orders. The anti-transgender teacher remains on the payroll of the Department of Education until his appeal against his dismissal is final. So effectively, he still works for the school, but he's still getting paid subject to this appeal. The school board says it will be impacted by the outcome of his latest proceeding seeking to challenge the composition of the appeals panel. He previously won one challenge to the composition of that panel. And finally, off the back of a comment yesterday, sorry, it's not off the back of a comment, but I read this off the back of a comment yesterday, where a listener says, you know, there's going to be no tourists coming to Donegal because of the cost of things. Well, this is a national angle on that story. Tourists are still dreaming about visiting Ireland despite fears over the high cost of living. New research from Tourism Ireland in 8 key markets reveals that 70% of travellers are interested in visiting our shores. The findings, shared this week at a virtual event attended by tourism and travel operators, confirm that Ireland's enduring appeal lies in the offering holidaymakers a chance to truly get away from it all. Okay, we welcome onto the programme Minister Martin Hayden, the Minister for Agriculture, Food and the Marine. And Minister, you're making your way to the region for what I presume you see as an important initiative.
Yes, absolutely. Looking forward to visiting Newtown Cunningham and other parts of Donegal today. But in particular, the first stop is Newtown Cunningham to launch a pilot cooperation project that we're going to, on a regional basis, have a project around tackling bovine TB as part of the Shared Island Initiative. So I'll be doing a joint launch with my counterpart, Minister Andrew Muir, Minister for Agriculture and Environment in Northern Ireland. And this is a regionalised approach to a series of measures we're taking around tackling the scourge that is bovine TB. And it will cover a region up in the Inishowen Peninsula, north of Newtown Cunningham, and with parts of Derry as well.
What's different about this approach? I presume it goes beyond cooperation.
Yeah, absolutely. But first and foremost, you know, we're putting our money where our mouth is through the Shared Island Fund. The Government of Ireland will contribute €6.5 million towards the total projected costs, which are €11.7 million in total. This is a 5-year period project, pilot project, and the remaining costs obviously going to be covered by my Department of Agriculture, Food and the Marine. And while I've adopted a new bovine TB strategy, the biggest step change in approach to this disease that has been on our island for 75 years now, we have always had close cooperation with our colleagues across the border. We've never had a regionalised project in it of itself. And if we look at examples of countries where they've successfully managed to eradicate bovine TB, like in New Zealand, the regionalised approach really, really worked. So at a time where our herd incidents our incidents here in the Republic are about 5.7% bovine TB, It's 10% across the border, and we are the one epidemiological island. So, you know, you can't, this disease doesn't recognise invisible borders, and you have to work on a whole of island basis.
But we are, aren't we, seeing massive increases in the TB eradication project over the last number of years, but we're seeing, you know, very high levels of TB. Does that not really indicate that what we are doing is asking farmers to do pretty much the same thing at a record cost to the general taxpayer when the results demonstrably are getting worse?
That would have been a very fair point to make to me this time last year when I was just coming into the job. And one of the first priorities I set for myself was tackling and bringing about a step change approach to how we tackle bovine TB. So over the course of last year, I developed a new strategy, consulted widely with stakeholders, and that consultation helped feed into a new bovine TB plan. To be honest, Greg, look, we have a challenge with bovine TB in that there isn't one single intervention that can eliminate this disease. Obviously, if this was easily done, it would have been done a long time ago. But by layering on, using the latest scientific data and knowledge, and layering on a series of interventions through my bovine TB action plan, which has five pillars and 30 different actions coming out of those pillars, we give ourselves the best chance to really significantly reduce the impacts of bovine TB, because this isn't just an economic hit for our farmers, and it is a very significant economic hit when you have a reactor and you're locked up with bovine TB, but also the stress and strain of this is really, really significant. I'm a farmer myself from Kildare. I remember the devastation on our farm back when in the 1990s I was still going to school and we had a reactor at the time. And it's not something you'd wish on any farm family. So, you know, I received a record amount of funding. You talked about the cost of this. I did receive a record allocation in my budget negotiations of €157 million for 2026 to tackle bovine TB. But the reason I got that is because I have a new plan, a new approach that genuinely will turn the dial on this disease once and for all. But to put that €157 million into context, back in 2019, the total cost of my TB eradication program for my department was just €37.5 million. So we are seeing the fact that this disease is dynamic. It is acting very differently. It's fair to say we're farming differently now than we were previously as well. And you know, there's key drivers of this, particularly in the dairy sector and beyond. So tackling where those drivers are, understanding what's happened differently and making that change means that we better understand this. And I don't see that €157 million be needed every year. It will be needed for the next 2 or 3 years while we get on top of this and have this change of approach that will, in the short, increase amount of reactors, and then it will plateau out. And then we'll see a very significant decline in those impacted. And that will allow us to get back onto credibly being in a position to talk about eradication again, which I don't think we can credibly talk about at the minute with such high incidence that we have at present.
No, of course, I'm not fully across all of the changes that you are going to be introducing. But in 2018, we did change tactics, we're not, from culling badgers to vaccinating them. And there is a sense, at least I've picked it up here, that has actually led to the problems, a greater problem that we're trying to address today. There is an argument out there for targeted culling in black spots, deer management as well, particularly in counties like Donegal, but not exclusively. You know, did those things not work relatively successful also?
Well, look, you know, if you talk to farmers tend to, and would have been in this boat myself, we tend to fixate on the badger, or in certain parts of the country, like my own, deer definitely are a contributing factor as well. I am bringing about a change in how we address wildlife. It was the case that all badgers were captured were vaccinated. We now have, thanks to modern technology, a test that can be carried out on badgers that will give us a result within 10 minutes. And in that incident, if the badger tests positive, badger will be removed. And that's for the badger's own sake. The others in the set with the badger as well. Previously, the badger would have been vaccinated without us having test results.
Okay, I don't want to fixate on the badger either, but do you attribute the shift in culling badgers to vaccinate them, you don't attribute the recent increase, the increase since then in TB, to that decision?
No, there's three key drivers of bovine TB. One, And as I said, that does get the most focus, particularly the badger, among farmers. But absolutely as well, it is scientifically proven that we have cattle-to-cattle transmission within herds. And then we have the difficulty that when the incidents are as high as they are at present, we have residual transmission being left behind in herds that is undetected bovine TB. And that's because none of our tests are 100% accurate for identifying this. So when a farmer does an annual herd test, there is what's called a skin test, and there's two injections into the neck of the animal. That test has an efficacy of 80%. So it means one in every five cattle that are tested will be missed. And that residual TB back in the herd has been a significant driver and a spread. But then also, if you layer on gamma interferon testing, which is blood testing effectively, with your skin testing, you bring the efficacy over to 90%. Blood testing has its own challenges in that it has a higher amount of false positives. So some animals will test positive who don't have it. And that's why you only use the blood testing in targeted areas. But by using both together, you will get a better overall picture here. And ultimately, what my new plan is about is identifying herd TB in the herd earlier. And then some of the key measures we've had that would have been quite controversial around people who are buying cattle, knowing the risk profile of the herd they're buying the cattle from. That's something farmers haven't had information about before. And I've talked about this for the last year. Farmers have become more aware of it. We have seen a reduction already in incidents from 6.4% to 5.7%. And I genuinely feel the farmers are in making more informed decisions around purchasing. And that's really, really important.
Okay.
Because if you have a herd that traditionally is free of bovine TB and you buy a very high-risk animal, it's very important you know that you're increasing your own risk profile in this coming in. So in basic terms, it's a multifaceted approach. Absolutely, wildlife control has a part to play. But if you don't address all three key areas of spread transmission, then you will leave a gap in the hedge.
Okay, just before I let you go, how sympathetic are you to the farmers that have been camped out in Bald Bia? They're looking for Larry Moran to leave his position as chairman of Bald Bia. Does Larry Moran retain your 100% support, or where do you stand on this issue?
Yeah, absolutely does. And the chairperson of Bald Bia, and look, this is something that's been well aired over 8-9 hours of debate in the Oireachtas. We had a private member's bill in the Dáil that went to a vote. We had Mr. Moran was in before the Joint Oireachtas Committee on Agriculture, answered questions extensively for 3 hours. There was no rules broken here. It is the case that it is a good thing that our commercial semi-state bodies would have somebody with commercial experience at the helm. And, you know, I disagreed with the IFA in particular in their approach to the illegal occupation of the building in Bald Bia, but I respect everyone's right to protest, but I believe they've got this one wrong in terms of their approach to this, and I'll continue to explain the nature of the trade deals that have been talked about here are really beneficial to Irish farmers.
No, I understand that, but even from someone outside of the farming industry looking on, it does seem strange to me, and I imagine it might to people around the continent, for an example, that you have someone heading up the head of the agency tasked with promoting Brand Ireland, an Irish grower, and they themselves are, you know, using Brazilian beef in production. That is a very strange message to send out, I think, to the people that we want to hear it, even not internally, externally to the country.
Yeah, and as the headline as you've described it, that would be hard to understand. But when you have the context that we're talking about trade deals that are worth hundreds of millions of euro with really key global food companies, and the reason there is a less than 1% of a trade deal involves beef from Latin America is just to prove contingency of supply, that there is access to an alternative market. Should there be a massive food scare in Ireland or in Europe, well, then that sounds different. You know, so it is how you describe it, and this isn't simple. This requires explaining to farmers. I understand why farmers are angry and upset about this, but I determined to continue to explain this to them, that by Irish food companies doing these deals, signing up to contingency of supply, and proving that you have an access to a market in somewhere like Brazil, even be it for less than 1%, it proves to the client and the customer that they'll never have a day where they won't have supply.
Yeah, but it's just how it appears that this person is the head of Brand Ireland, who is using a product from another country, and there are question marks over the quality assurance of that product. You know, the optics of it aren't fantastic. I'm not getting into the finite elements of it. It just looks really strange.
Details, Greg, with the greatest respect, Greg, the finite detail is really important for farmers to understand. And I can't sack somebody based on optics or perception. And I won't, because the detail behind this, if this Irish food company didn't do this deal, and it's the client company who demands that they can prove they have access to a market. So basically, I'll explain this in simple terms. In 2008, we had the pork dioxin issue in Ireland. It was a food contaminant in the feed for pigs. And overnight, all Irish pork had to go off shelves. That can happen from time to time. That could happen across Europe with some issue. And the company who's dealing in hundreds of millions of euro and needs to be sure that they're always going to have supply as part of any contract, needs to be able to be sure that there would be alternative sources of supply should that happen across Europe and across that market. That's where the less than 1% from Brazil comes from in this instance. It just proves that should everything fall down within 6 weeks, food will be able to be sourced from another jurisdiction. If this was about price or undermining the work of our Irish farmers, it would be way more than 1%. It's not that. But I'll make the point to you, if an Irish food company didn't agree to these conditions that global companies they're trying to win contracts with are seeking, then another company would do this deal, a non-Irish company, who wouldn't buy any Irish food product. The less than 1%, which has been the focus here, is facilitating a trade deal that is worth hundreds of millions of euros to Irish farmers.
But do you think that it's just final question, because I know you're busy, but look, if I were, you know, someone in a different country looking on, would you at least concede that it in some way may potentially blur the message of quality Irish 100% beef? If you were looking from France over here, do you concede, or maybe you completely disagree, that it can be damaging to Brand Ireland if we were only focusing on that element of this story?
But see, the only thing we're focusing on here is what's consumed in Ireland, which, you know, is fine from an Irish consumer perspective. But the fact is that Irish farmers' produce, only 10% of that is for the Irish market. 90% of what our farmers produce is for export, and that's where we get our great value for the very good prices for beef that your Donegal farmers would have received up in the north west last year, for example. What happens internationally is way more impactful on the price our farmers get than what happens domestically as well. So we have to have a very clear understanding of how international trade deals work, and this is the very integrated nature of global supply chain. It's not easy to explain. I'm a few minutes into this now, and I understand the messaging of the likes of the IFA is easier to upset farmers.
I fully get your argument, but you know, perception is 9/10 of reality. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, and I understand that, and that's why for the rest of my time in the Department of Agriculture, I'll be answering questions around the nature of global supply trade deals. But I continue to explain it because I fundamentally know and believe that this is in farmers' best interest. These trade deals are absolutely why we have had another year of record growth of the value of farmers' food and drink produce that's been exported. In 2011, when I first became a TD, the value of our agri-food exports was around 10 billion euro. We expect that, when the figures come out very soon for last year, to have surpassed 21 billion euro for the very first time. The reason we've been able to grow the value of the food and drink that our farmers produce and give them a better price and return is because we're in those higher value markets. Our Irish beef farmers aren't competing with Brazilian beef farmers on commodity markets when they export. We're in a higher value market, and that's what the Boerbia quality assurance scheme that farmers provide all the data for allows us to access. So that's why I'll continue to defend it, and it's why I'll argue very strongly that the work of Boerbia is very much in farmers' interests. And need to be able to be supported and to continue.
Okay, listen, thank you very much for all of your time. Minister Martin Hayden, Minister for Agriculture, Food and the Marine. Have a good day.
You too, Greg. Thank you very much.
086 60 25,000 is the number you're using. A caller says we should not be exporting beef. We should be feeding people in Ireland first and foremost. Try buying potatoes grown in Ireland. Stop exporting unweaned calves. But that's the industry, though. We only need 10% of the beef we produce. What do we do with the remain? I mean, the beef market would collapse. You either would reduce the herd by 90%, or the value of beef would just be, it would be throwaway meat, effectively, if the herd size remained the same and all of that meat was internalised. Bridie, thanks so much for joining me.
Hi, how's it going?
Good, Bridie. You're of the view that most farmers feel Larry Moran should go. In your view, why is his position untenable? Why must he go?
I think we've worked long and hard to get the quality that we have, and farmers put in a lot to have that quality. Have to do a lot of stringent documentation and have to try and get things, you know, 100%. That's why we have a name in Ireland for good beef. And someone who's the CEO of Borbia, which is meant to be our stringent control area that we go to, where we get our name, has another company bringing in Brazilian beef with hormones in it. That is a complete disaster. Straight away, anybody knows that. This, you know, and your minister was on, it's all about deals and money. Mm. But at the end of the day, if your quality collapses in any sort of way, and the one thing that always brings me back to quality and what we eat and the food we get and how we get it is the incident that happened in England with mad cow disease, where apparently horse meat or horse brains was fed to cattle. Cattle went off their... I got mad cow disease, which people ended up eating this meat, getting CJD. And I would say people know they're out there, know people, some of their loved ones at CJD. Mm. And it's an awful, 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 terrible disease.
Yeah, we can quickly forget about these things, can't we? Yet it's very recent history.
Yeah. It's quite recent, actually.
So, but the minister seems to be... the minister seems to be saying, though, that we're not looking at the bigger picture, that that's about internal markets and not external markets, and this is about big deals and having places to send this meat in. I'm not going to lie, I kind of got lost a little bit along the lines in that explanation. I thought it seemed much simpler to me that, you know, this sends out not a fantastic message about Irish beef.
But that's it. That's it. You only have to send out this message and people will get scared. You know, even the blue tongue thing, you know, that recently happened. Mm. You have to, if you don't have some sort of quality, you have nothing. Things are still going to happen if you even want 100% quality. So, but if you try to go by the letter, you have some chance. But like if you're... your man is taking in Brazilian beef. We don't know. But everything that's coming from this is that Brazil don't have these standards at all.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Bridie, listen, thank you so much for your time this morning. A caller says, I've no confidence in the Borbia label anymore, and all the waffle by the minister and the government won't convince me that Irish beef is of the highest quality when the CEO is importing beef from a country where standards are much lower than ours. Another caller says, I follow a lady on TikTok who shows you what's really in our food. We buy farmed range chicken goujons every week and they're 100% chicken breast. The lady on TikTok read the packet and found that it's packed and cooked in Ireland, but the chicken comes from China. We're not aware of what we're consuming. We need to look at the back of packets so we know what we're consuming. We used to get these chicken goujons. They came in a clear bag. They were absolutely delicious and they were affordable, right? But it wasn't China that the meat was coming from. It was like Singapore or something. But they were so blooming tasty and cheap. But you would have to have had a good close look at the packaging to see how could they possibly produce and how did they produce this chicken on the other side of the world, you know, slaughter it, butcher it, bread it, package it, cook it, send it over here. And it was much, much cheaper than an Irish brand. I haven't seen that around. I'm not saying it doesn't exist any longer, but we did use it for a time. This is years ago, but it was from Singapore or some far-flung place. Paul Gillespie, Donegal Branch Chair with Diabetes Ireland. Are you there, Paul?
Good morning, Greg. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you. Thanks for joining us. Right, okay. So a delegation from the Donegal Diabetes Committee was due to have its quarterly meeting at Letterkenny University Hospital, the steering group meeting. That didn't go ahead. For what reason? You did get info. We'll get to that in a moment. But why didn't the meeting go ahead?
It turned out there's quite a few of the main stakeholders weren't able to attend. Now, I think maybe it was down because it was the schools were off this week and it was Ash Wednesday, and even a few of the TDs weren't able to attend. So it was decided at the last minute yesterday that we would postpone it. I had hoped to postpone it to next week, but unfortunately, the next time they can get all the main stakeholders together is the end of March, so it's 5 weeks before we meet. So
you did manage, though, to get an update. Yeah. It is disappointing, of course, but you did manage to get an update on some of the topics that you were going to be bringing to that meeting. One of the questions, are all three permanent adult endocrinologists now commenced in LUH? What was the response to that?
Yeah, and that's a very good positive reply there. There's one endocrinologist which is shared between the community hub and the hospital, 50-50%. He's fully in position now, almost 2 years. The second endocrinologist started off June last year, and now a third endocrinologist has also accepted the post, and he's due to start now in the coming weeks. So we've gone from 2 years ago, whenever I was on your show, we had no endocrinologist in Letterkenny. It was in dire states. So there's great improvement there now in the endocrinology field.
Yeah. That's fantastic. And just remind listeners why that's good news. What difference does that make?
It makes a huge difference to particularly the control of type 1 diabetes, which, as you know, is a chronic life-threatening condition. So getting to see an endocrinologist and to review all your bloods and diet and everything like that is vital to Brilliant. Keep you out of hospital, basically, and make sure that everything, you're not going to have prolonged complications in years to come.
Brilliant. That's good. Yeah, exactly. And you know, without reviews, maybe long-term issues that you may well have to live with, hopefully they get caught and your treatment can be adjusted accordingly. You also asked if...
The government and HSE guideline is that, you know, everyone with type 1 diabetes should be seen at least every 6 months. Mm-hmm. Letterkenny had actually went to 3 years. It was 3 years recall list. So it's a vast improvement. Yeah. With the current crowd, they've actually got it down now. They've actually got two part-time endocrinologists doing 12 hours per week, week about. And so they've actually got the waiting list down now, we believe, to just about a year. Okay. So, but they are committed now when they get the third one in that they hope to start performing closer to the government and HSE.
Really
guideline.
Promising, because I remember that conversation we had those couple of years ago, and it was like, well, why should someone with type 1 have a different outcome here compared to someone else? That's really positive. You also asked if the new ANP candidate in adult diabetes is now in post. And this is also, I think, isn't it, connected to adult type 1?
It is, yeah. And you probably remember a good 5-6 years ago when we met with the Minister, Simon Harris, at the time, and he agreed that ANPs are now vital in supporting endocrinology team. And it was determined that Letterkenny actually needed 3 ANPs in adults because of the population of Donegal. We've been fighting for years. It took them up until now to finally get the first one. So the first candidate ANP is now in place, which is brilliant. And we're pushing them to continue to advertise for the second ANP, which we also believe is vitally needed. Mm. So progress there as well.
Yeah, it's all good. What else on the positive side? What other positive indications did you get in response to these questions for updates?
Well, on podiatry, again, 2 years ago, there were no podiatrists in Letterkenny. Now the two podiatrist positions are full. The care there was a massive, well, there's a waiting list, but now they've got it right up to date. Letterkenny now have quite a lot of dietitians in place. So now whenever you go in for your appointment to either the paediatric clinic or the adult clinic, there should be a dietitian there now as well that you can go and talk to. Because like what we're aiming for is what's the staffing of what is called the Centre of Excellence. It's a local term, but it's nationally only been available down below the Limerick-Dublin line. So we've been pushing for many, many years. And I suppose that's the only disappointing news we have had over the last few months, is that, you remember the last time we spoke, Greg, it was after our delegation met the Minister for Health in Letterkenny, and that was in May last year. Mm-hmm. And that was with the promise that it was all going to be reviewed and she would have a proper meeting with us in the follow-up. The follow-up meeting has never happened. Mm. The only good point is that the Minister is working nationally with Diabetes Ireland and that, and they have now set up an audit of all diabetic. And so whenever this review is taking place, it should highlight the deficiencies in Letterkenny. But the main issue we are still chasing the Minister for is the paediatrics. We've never got the Centre of Excellence. We've never got the paediatric endocrinologist, even though in 2025, the hospital had prioritised in their estimates that the paediatric endocrinologist was badly needed, and it has never been approved or sanctioned. So
is that priority, is that still on the list, so to speak? Is it still
priority? Yeah.
Okay. So, I mean, and we'll review again after the next meeting. You know, we've made a lot of progress here, it has to be said, I think. There's always more to be done. And we started from a very low base in terms of coverage. But, I mean, there's quite a significant improvement there, isn't it? And those changes over the last number of years, are they improving people's lives, people's outcomes and people's well-being, while acknowledging that there's still work to be done?
Yes, we can start to see it already. Like, in particular, we have to congratulate the ANPs and the CNSs and everyone working on the diabetes in Letterkenny, and including the support doctors who were not endocrinologists, but they were still stepping in to help out for the last couple of years. So things are improving, yes. Okay. So I would encourage anyone from out in the community that gets an appointment, they can go now with confidence to the hospital, knowing that they are going to see an endocrinologist on the adult side.
Right.
And that the ANP in paediatrics has been supported by the clinician from Sligo as well.
Okay, but and we not everyone who we need to keep pushing. And fair play to you, Paul. Not everyone who will be able to benefit from this now and into the future will realise that the hard work you yourself and other support you have put in to get us to where we are today. It really is great to see. As I say, so much improvement with quite a bit to go, but we're in a far better place now, and I hope you're proud of yourself.
I'm very proud, and of my committee as well. We have a very good, hard-working committee, and I also must shout out to all the five Donegal TDs are really pushing hard for us to now that there is a bit of an impetus and things are improving, that we need to get the Centre of Excellence. And one of the other things that we keep highlighting at any meetings is that we honestly believe that the Letterkenny Hospital has to be moved to a Tier 4 hospital. It's the sixth busiest hospital in Ireland. It's not funded to that event. But as well as that, like Letterkenny is so isolated geographically and there's no rail network, there's no motorways. So like Letterkenny Hospital needs to be a complete revamp, and it'll raise all care paths and will improve greatly if we get Tier 4 funding.
All right, Paul, thank you.
No, sorry, Greg, just on one of the other main reasons as I was on today, please, is that we are a voluntary committee. We run quite a lot of educational events for families living with diabetes, but these events need money. So we are doing a fundraising this weekend for the Churchgate Collection. So just to let everyone know that this Sunday, this weekend, now a majority of the masses around Donegal, we're trying to get as many covered as we can, but there will be collectors at the gate this weekend now for Donegal.
All right, so Paul, I've thanked you. You've thanked TDs. I need a clip for a promo. Come on now, I've been chatting to you about this for years. Give Greg a bit of love.
Of course, Greg, and Highland Radio for all the promotion every time. And yes, you have been a massive, massive supporter.
I'm joking, you idiot. I'm joking, you, Paul. Listen.
Not at all. Now you're wrong.
Hey, keep up the great work. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks to you and all your listeners.
All right, good luck to you. Thanks very much indeed. A caller says the biggest transmitter of bovine TB is because there are too many cattle too close together. Greg, on the issue of taxis, bring on Uber. In our area, the taxis won't answer phones after 7 p.m. It would serve them right for picking and choosing. Uber would bring back life to rural pubs. But we also have to understand that these are self-employed people, and they are probably critical in getting potentially older people to hospital appointments or to the GP, or, you know, maybe kids from school if the car's broken down. They're serving a need at that time, or else they wouldn't be doing that too. So I'd be very sympathetic to some of them that you're talking about. A bit of a deregulation, it means that anyone in your area could effectively be a taxi driver. It would be fantastic for rural Ireland, but I, of course, you know, again, the impact it would have on the people that we're talking of, taxi drivers, etc. I used Ubers on holidays, and it's a much faster system to get a taxi, a much safer system for people travelling alone. Yeah, I would, the first app I open if I'm lucky enough to get away is, and I haven't for a while, but hopefully soon, is Uber, I'll be honest with you. But that's not to say, I just don't have an understanding of the internal taxi systems of these countries. It's just really handy. On the issue of board beer, I'm delighted to hear the debate on imported meat and what's in it. Remember when Robert Kennedy Jr. spoke about similar in the USA, the media branded him a madman. We'll be eating ourselves to the grave with this foreign meat, says a listener.
Get the full picture. The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Right, so we have been covering changes to the SNA system. We've been learning and highlighting the fact that some schools were being told that under new criteria that they'd be losing SNAs, even though the need within those schools, as they were, as SNAs were placed previously, hadn't changed, if you get where I'm coming from. And a pause was put on this, and a pause was put on these reductions. But things aren't all set in stone yet, or all sorted yet. Fiona is mother to 7-year-old Shifra, who has a newish type 1 diabetic, and joins me on the show now. Fiona, thanks so much for joining us.
Hi, Greg. Thanks for having me.
Right, so it's almost like a stay, isn't it, rather than a victory here? Because as we were hearing from people on the show yesterday, we need to know exactly what's going on now and what will be happening into the future to ensure that children who need these supports get them.
Yes, exactly. When I heard the pause, I have to say I was happy at first. And then when I actually sat back and thought about it, I thought a pause is just something that they stop for now. They are going to come back to it. And after hearing the minister on prime time on Tuesday night, then saying it's only a pause for a week or two, I just thought, and they're going to keep doing the cuts, but they're just going to do this lower. I just thought we cannot take our foot off the gas for this. We have to just keep going, because they are going to keep doing the cuts, and we have to advocate for our children.
Yeah, and just to give people an early heads up, stop the cuts, support kids. It's a demonstration protest taking place at the Market Square, Bonkrana, Wednesday the 25th of February 2026. It's at 5 p.m. And I think, Fiona, it's important that we as a community understand the issues here, because it's very possible, right, that we could have, you know, six very resilient mums standing there. I'm sure the turnout will be much greater than that. But that doesn't reflect that this is a situation that affects the entire population, not just those you would think it would affect.
It does, and that's why I am putting this plea out for people to come, even parents who I have spoken to who are still in full support of us, but have said, you know, it's not going to affect my child because my child doesn't have an SNA, but it is going to affect every child. It's going to have like a domino effect if the SNA is not in the room and the teacher has to step in. For example, I'm using Shifra as an example.
Yeah.
If the teacher has to step in, they are taken away. Like Shifra, I'll give you an example. On Friday, had a really bad day in school. There's a medical device hooked to her stomach. It went off 9 times. So it's a loud alarm vibration. You have to physically go in, press the button to let you know that you are aware of it. So it took the SNA 9 times that she had to deal with Shifra that day. 3 of them, she was very low, so it took a good half hour. The other ones would take 10 minutes. So in total, that took probably 2 hours. So if that SNA is taken away, that teacher would have spent 2 hours that day with Shifra when she wasn't teaching. So it is affecting the other children in the class as well. If you don't think it is going to affect, it is going to have a major implication on every child's education and how it is being delivered.
But Fiona,
if the SNAs are removed, they're vital.
It's clearly very complex, the guidelines, which the government now wants very stringently enforced. Would that not work in Shifra's favour because of her physical needs? I know you're not just thinking about your own situation and your child's situation, but would the rules as the government wants to apply them not benefit you?
Yes, you probably are right. Yes, they probably will. And even though Cockhill School, like St. Warren's that they go to, have been caught, Shifra will probably still get her SNA. But there is 28 children in that school who need extra help, 27 plus Shifra, who need that help. So if Shifra gets one of them, that's only leaving 1.5 SNA for 27 other children. And the likelihood is, even though they will want to, they will have to pull, you know, say Shifra's SNA away to help with something else. So it is going to impact her, and it's going to impact every child that needs it. And it shouldn't just be, yes, Shifra's has a medical need, some children have physical needs, but there's a lot of emotional needs, behavioural needs, and sometimes children just need 5 minutes out, just to be brought out for 5 minute break. And this is where the SNAs are so important.
Answer to that question is perfect in that we can't just be thinking about ourselves or individually. We have to look at the bigger picture, which is exactly what you are doing. And, you know, I mean, we are the bosses of the government. That's how it works. We vote them in. We're their bosses. If there's 25-odd thousand SNAs and the promise of millions more, and some people may have voted this government in off the back of thinking we would have more SNAs in schools, well, then that's what has to be delivered. It's what teachers and parents and the government themselves think is best for our children, you know, and that's what this protest is about, isn't it? It's holding the feet to the fire to say, you know, we should call the shots here, and this is what we want and this is what we need.
Yeah, and exactly. And there is not a school out there who does not need more SNAs or needs to lose any. You know, if anything, our school could do with more, and so could many other schools. There's no way that they can justify removing SNAs. And as you said, we are their boss. But hopefully something like this they will listen to, because they are doing this protest nationwide. It's in Dublin, Kerry, Cork, most of the counties that are affected. So I just thought we need to do it in Donegal because it has affected us. And we need to show that we won't stand for it either.
Okay, so if you want to back Shifra, for the parents and the children and the teachers, by the way, and the SNAs as well. Stop the Cuts, Support Kids. It's a protest demonstration taking place at the Market Square, Buncrana, on Wednesday, the 25th of February, 2026 at 5 p.m. If you've half an hour, 45 minutes, whatever, you can go out and show your support. Thank you, Fiona. Best wishes to you, Shifra, and the rest of the family.
No problem. Thank you.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Look after yourself. Let me do a request. Seamus Downey is in Derry. And a big happy birthday to you, Seamus, from Andrea, Hugh, Gareth and Adam. Have a great day. Back to comments, though. Farmers should pull out of Bull Beer. Far too much bureaucracy and very little for it. When the top man can't import, or when the top man can import Brazilian beef without any regulation, this in turn cuts the price of Irish beef. Yes, our beef industry is too big, too many cattle. It's why there's so much bovine TB, polluted land and rivers. The ranchers are making the money and the rest of us suffer the environmental consequences, says a listener. On the issue of, well, let's stick with that for a moment. The EU will soon not allow a guaranteed Irish symbol. A new symbol for the European market will be created and we'll have to follow that. Europe is killing our standards and no one is doing anything about it. And on Ubers, the Competition and Consumer Protection Commission are saying we need to open up the Irish taxi market. As the wife of a taxi man, we struggle to make a living from it. Now they want to add more into the market because of the risks of working late at night now. He only does day work, but mostly that work is 6.5 days a week. We have a daughter in university, so we are trying to live and pay bills here and keep her in college. It's next to impossible. We're just scraping by. Thank you, because I was trying to articulate the impact this might actually have on, you know, the current taxi providers who've been there for us, with thick and thin, not always when we want, right? But they're often the lifeline to get home and have been there when public transport isn't, etc. So we have to try and consider everyone's position, I suppose. Right, so earlier this week, I was joined by a writer who needs very little introduction but deserves a massive one. She's the mastermind behind the global phenomenon Derry Girls, a show that didn't just put Derry on the map, it carved it into the hearts of viewers from New York to Delhi. And after keeping us all waiting to see what she'd do next, she finally is back. Her brand new Netflix series, How to Get to Heaven from Belfast, has just landed. Trading the school uniforms of the 90s for a high-stakes, darkly comedic mystery set in the heart of modern-day Belfast. Lisa, thank you so much for chatting to us and congratulations. It must be a wonderful feeling to see your body of work up there to a global audience.
It's surreal is what it is. Like, I've never had everything go out all at once like this everywhere. So it's certainly new because everyone's at different stages of the story. It's incredible.
Do you have any preference as to how something is consumed? Do you know, I mean, traditionalists like that weekly release. Now we're obviously in an era and you can't push back against the tide where people might choose to watch it all in one go. I find when I do that, sometimes a particular episode, I can maybe miss what the creator wanted to get across in that moment because it becomes part of episode 4 or 5, right? Do you worry or think much about that or bother yourself with it?
I know exactly what you mean. So my thinking is, like, as a writer, as a creator, I would prefer it probably to go out a bit slower, you know, because you spend so long making these things and then it's all like a whirlwind. It's over in 2 seconds. But as a viewer, I'm a binger. So I get so frustrated when people don't drop things at once. So if I'm enjoying something as a viewer, I get really angry when they make me wait a week. So, I kind of can see both sides of it.
Yeah, indeed. And I know people actually schedule the programmes themselves on a weekly basis. I wouldn't have that commitment. I'm the same as you. If it's there, I will take it. It's great to see Donegal represented. Obviously, we're going to be a bit parochial here, broadcasting in the Northwest.
It looks gorgeous, I think, on the show as well, do you know, which is a lot of Mike Lennox, the director's amazing work. But I love Donegal. I spent a lot of time there growing up as a kid, and I just think it's the most beautiful place on earth, really, do you know. And I just, it suits stories. So, like, it suits, like, spooky, eerie stories so much. You know, it just feels like where ghost stories are made to me, Donegal, you know. It's incredible.
Yeah, well, anything that gets the tourists here, you know. but it does sort of play, there is a function to it in the story, in its location and where what it means in the principal characters' lives as well. It's not just literally about sort of location and presence.
No, it's where the sort of missing member of their gang has gone to make her life, really. And yeah, they haven't, the three other friends haven't seen her in 20 years, and they're all from Belfast, but she's sort of taken herself off and hidden herself away in a big house in Donegal, in rural Donegal. So it's very central to the story, and they come back to that place a lot because it's where her family are and everything too.
You described the girls in a previous interview as a, and I'll just edit it a little bit, a poo A team.
Okay. Yes.
That jumped out at me, right? Was that just an off-the-cuff thing or did that come to you during the process?
No, that was a big reference point for us, the A-team, even though you probably it might not be obvious to a viewer, but I really loved this idea of a female, like a middle-aged female A-team, but the, you know, the mum wagon is the, you know, that great black van they had. And And in the A-team, they always added bits to the vehicle to make it better. But there, in my show, you know, it gets worse and worse and more damaged. And So, yeah, I just love this idea of every situation those three women go into, they make worse, where the A team, you know, made it better, obviously.
Hence the SH1T, yeah. Right? In Derry Girls, a lot of the chaos came from teenage naivety, but here it comes sort of from adult baggage or trauma or whatever, right? How do you sort of approach writing incompetent investigators, but they're actually smart women, right? So there's this juxtaposition almost, and you have to, you know, do the characters justice, but get the story across the way you want to get it across.
Yeah, I think I had this, you know, they're very kind of competent and they're like, you know, they must be. Saoirse has a good career, Robin has three children, Dara's got a job and looks after her mum, but like, there's something about when they come together, they kind of revert and they turn into schoolgirls again, and they're arguing and they lose sight of the point a lot. And it's, you know, I like this idea of we're all sort of pretending to be grown-ups, but actually deep down in our heart and in our soul, we're still kids, you know. So, yeah, there's something about the chaos of the three of them when they're together and things turn scary that makes them kind of lose it a bit, you know.
And I think anyone who sort of has a responsible job or kids or whatever, and if you do hook up with an old friend, it can anchor you back to those childhood memories or that childness inside you. It never goes. It's just a case of it being brought out in you.
Absolutely. And I often think as well, that's why when you meet up with those people, and you may not see them a lot anymore, whatever your relationship is to your childhood friends or cousins, or, you know, nobody makes you laugh like them, because it goes so childish so quickly, you know, and it's, there's just a real joy that they've known of, you knowing each other's history inside out, and the shorthand of that as well.
Everyone fancies themselves now as a bit of an investigator, don't they? Digging in, trying to get to the bottom of a mystery. Is there a bit of that in you, a bit of that, many of that, much of that in your characters?
And all the characters, like, I think they start off pretty bad at this stuff, and they very slowly but surely improve. They do get to the bottom of it at the end. I think I'm completely obsessed with true crime and all that stuff as well, and with you know, I watch a lot of thrillers and mystery stuff on TV too, and read a lot of that.
I don't know what your situation is, but my partner is of the view I am actually researching to do away with her. I watch so much of this stuff. I stumbled on the first 48. I don't know if you've watched that, but no. There's about 20 series of it. Do not start it, because it is real.
I'm definitely going
to
start.
It's proper fly on the wall from the beginning to the end stuff. It's the perfect program for the first 48. There's a new one out too. I'm not going to get down that rabbit hole. We're talking about your show, right?
It's going to be the first thing I do when I'm
off. Oh, well, start in one of the more modern episodes and then work your way back, because if you start at the very beginning, it's been going for years and years.
Okay.
Your body of work goes far beyond the Derry Girls, okay? But, I mean, a lot of people, that's what they associate you with. Are you comfortable with that? You know, because you've won awards and got accreditation for loads of stuff, right? I know you're very proud of the Derry Girls, but...
Yeah. Oh, I know. I love talking about it. Like, people would need to stop me talking about it. I'm so proud of it. I'm so proud that I got to make that show about my home. And I just feel so privileged, you know, to be... Like, what a thing. To about my town and the people I grew up with. So, no, I waited a long time to be able to write about where I come from. So, yeah, I'm always happy to.
All right. With that in mind, is there a hierarchy of awards, right? So you've got, you know, from your peers for the work that you've done. Then you get a Peace and Reconciliation Award, right? And then the Freedom of Derry, right? So which is getting the centre position on the mantelpiece there?
I still can't believe anybody's given me an award for anything, but the Peace and Reconciliation one was incredible. But the funniest one was University of Ulster and Queen's gave me a doctorate, and my family, like that, they just were like, we thought we'd never see the day. You know, that's the one where they're just like, has the world lost its mind? So, yeah. I never thought that would come.
It's fantastic stuff. In terms too of expectation on you, right, we need another hit, Lisa. You seem a very down-to-earth character. I don't know if that works in your favour or against it, but you know, in terms of will the audience get it, will the company like it, blah, 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 is that tough? I mean, I know we all have pressures in life, right? But is that tough in your job?
I think the toughest thing, honestly, like there's different stages. It's very tough to get anything made. I think, like, and anyone who writes will tell you this, you know, it's so hot. It's like a miracle when anything gets made. And then it's a miracle if anybody watches it. In this day and age, there's so much choice. So it feels like there's always a hurdle, you know, and all you can do is write the show you want to write the show you want to watch, hope it finds an audience, you know, and believe in it. Work with good people. That would be my advice to anyone that wants to do this.
Yeah, it must just be wonderful and to be talking about something you can be so proud of as well. And I don't think it sort of, it goes past you either that, you know, that it's a fantastic position to be in.
Yeah, I feel very lucky, you know, because I feel like I'm getting to write exactly what I want to write, and it's bonkers, you know, like the tone of this. The genre, I don't even know how you would describe it. So to be allowed to kind of do it and to have such fun with it.
Well, that's it. I don't like to be too... I just like watching TV shows and not reading too much into them. But the one thing I would imagine, you know, if you're sort of trying to balance, you know, quick-witted the way we speak as Irish people and have that rhythm going there, and I think you've talked about rhythm of comedy in the past, but at the same time, it is a sort of a thriller as well, right? So you need those moments to land just at the right time. I would hate to try and get that right, which you have. How big of a challenge was that?
It's funny because I think it was actually the other way around, if you know what I mean. Like, I love thrillers and mysteries. I think they're incredibly hard to write, and I have so much respect for people that write those straight, like, murder mysteries. It's technically so tough. So I knew if I was going to do it and I really wanted to have a crack at it, I had to do it my way. It had to be sort of chaotic and Irish and hopefully funny, because that's my tone and that's the only way it would work for me. I felt if I'd have tried to do it any other way, it might have felt not kind of authentic, or like I was copying, you know, someone else's show.
But would you like the crack of one under a pen name?
Maybe. Yeah. Oh, I hadn't thought of that. Yeah,
it worked for JK. Why can't it work for L. McG? You know what I mean? Well, listen, Kamir, I know you've got a whole host of engagements throughout the course of the day. Thank you so much for chatting to us. I'll be honest, I didn't get a chance to watch as much of this as I will, so we're going to be binging it over the course of the next week or so. But Lisa McGee, thank you so much, and it's wonderful to see you doing so well. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Well, we were talking to the Derry girl before the break, and next week is going to be the Derry boy, David James, our own David James, in studio with me now. Hi, David. How are you getting on?
Morning, Greg.
Good to have you with us.
Great to be here.
What's it like being on in the morning? Normally, it's a 1:30 kickoff for you.
This
now.
Is my first time on the Greg Hughes Show.
Oh, there you go.
I was only on the 9 till noon before. Great
and
to be here.
And come here, talking about firsts, you've a show coming up in the Millennium Forum in Derry, and it's actually next week, isn't it? It's the 26th of February, a day this week. This is a big deal. I mean, it's an iconic venue. It's on, I think, most performers' wish list to go. But to have your own show there, how significant is it for you?
Yeah, it's massive, massive significance. You know, I grew up spending an awful lot of time around Derry and going to the Millennium to watch so many of the greats. And I remember looking up on the stage and thinking, I would just love to have my own show here. But I honestly thought that it was something that was really out of reach, and I never ever thought that I'd get the opportunity to have my own show there. So it's going to be a very special night, and one that I'm really looking forward to be honest.
At this stage of your career, is it excitement? Is it nerves? Is it a combination of both?
It's a mixture of both. You know, I would be lying if I said I wasn't nervous about it, but I think nerves are important too, you know. It gets you up for it, but hopefully, once I get onto the stage, I'll just be able to enjoy the experience.
And have you, I presume maybe you do for all shows, but are you go with a particular theme or a particular set list, giving the setting and the importance of this for you?
Well, a lot of people would be used to seeing us in a dance scenario, and the set list for this concert is quite different to that. You know, it's a chance to just relax a little bit, sing songs that we wouldn't normally get the opportunity to sing, sing songs that have significance to me and that mean something to me. So there's some nice songs in there that I think people are going to hopefully like and hopefully relate to as well.
Yeah, and it's much more focus on you in this setting, isn't it? Because in a dance, right, I mean, the focus is on the music, but people are dancing. Yep. And you, this is people in a horseshoe shape effectively looking at you and your band. So it's a great opportunity to showcase, but I think it brings just an extra bit of focus onto your performance and your band's performance as well.
Absolutely. We did our first concert there in the Ardoan Theatre at the end of January, and you know, we were in rehearsing during the day and everything was great, and came out then, and once the lights went on and I seen all the people, and you know, instead of dancing around, they were just staring at me. Yeah. It was slightly daunting for the first little while, but thankfully that show was very successful. It sold out, so it set us up nicely for Derry.
Yeah, and ironically, given the scale of the Millennium Forum, but also giving its setup and the type of show, this is going to be an intimate thing. This is very much a connection between you and the audience as well. Mm-hmm. As I say, in a different, maybe more intimate way than you might see just in the regular shows. How do people get hold of a ticket if they want to go along? It's next Thursday night at 8 p.m.
Yeah. So it's next Thursday, a week away today, and you can get a ticket from the theatre box office, millenniumforum.co.uk. You can go into the box office if you're in Derry City, or you can give them a call as well.
Big weekend as well too, right? It never stops. It's one of those things, you know, if you're in the entertainment industry, you want to be busy all the time, but the week, it's midweek, it's weekends, it's different things all the time. So it's a dancing weekend at the Clannery Hotel, Letterkenny. This is really... It coincides, or is it actually a celebration of you and the band's year on the road?
Yeah, so we wanted to do a few things to mark our first anniversary. And, you know, we had a brilliant first year on the road. Thoroughly enjoyed every single minute of it.
It's a gamble, that wasn't it? You know, like, massive. I mean, there's no guarantees.
No, definitely right? Not.
You have to fill the book.
Yeah, you have to do. And, you know, I'm so lucky to have such a good team behind me. My manager, John, has been a great support to my career, both on stage and off stage. And then the lads that we've got in the band and the crew as well. We're just a great team and we love working together, which makes it that bit better. But we wanted to do a few things to mark our first anniversary on the road. And this weekend in the Clannery is going to be one big celebration of that.
Yeah, so it's Friday, Saturday and Sunday. And it's all individual shows, nights. Is it a package?
So there's some people that are there on the package for the full weekend.
Yes.
And then you can pay on the door as well. So tomorrow night, Friday night, the doors open at 8:15. And then there's Jimmy Buckley and his band from 9:00. Myself and the lads from 11:00. And then after that, the party doesn't stop. We've got Shuni Cramsey out in the late bar. Saturday night, same thing. Doors 8:15 with Olivia Douglas, Conor O'Donnell, Jason McCahill, the Matrimony Band, and then myself and the lads. And then Sunday afternoon is going to be a big one. That's from 3 to 5. And that's our family-friendly show. And it's just nice to give...
I think it's a really good idea that, you know...
Yeah, it's just, it's nice to give the opportunity for a nice little day out.
Sometimes you wonder, is it appropriate to bring the kids? At least now, you know, you're saying, look, this is a family-friendly show. And fans of yours, fans of your music, they're for all ages, you know. So.
Absolutely, and... We do a thing where under 12s go free as well. So it's a nice opportunity for them to come in, hear a little bit of the band. Look, on Sunday, we'll be aware that there'll be some kids there, so it won't be as probably loud as it normally would be.
We'll rank it up to 11. They love it. No, 11. The kids love the... No, I know what you're saying. Okay, so that's this weekend, the Clannery Hotel. If you're in for the whole weekend, and so many people do that now, have a fantastic weekend. But don't forget, you can go to the shows. The Saturday shows, at the afternoon or evening?
So Saturday night, there's an afternoon session from 2 to 4 in the bar. Okay. On Saturday afternoon with White Lightning. And then Saturday night then is the dance and the doors open at 8:15.
Brilliant stuff. Okay. And don't forget the Millennium Forum in Derry this day week, 8 p.m. And you can get your tickets at the box office. Give them a call, go online, or indeed, if you're in the city, call in. Brilliant to hear you being so busy, David. You're going to do us a quick track, are you?
Yeah, well, I've got the guitar here.
Excellent.
And in our theatre show, you know, it's, as I said, we do some songs that have significance to me. And my grandparents were both from Derry City, and they used to sing to us growing up, and I thought it would be nice to include this song. This is a song that my granny used to sing to me every night. Sonny lives on a farm in a far distant place. Take off your shoes, stay out of the race. Lay down your head on a soft riverbed. Sonny always remembers the words Mama said. Sonny, don't go away, I'm here all alone. Your daddy's a sailor, never came home. Nights are so long, the silence goes on, and I'm feeling so tired and not all that strong. Sonny works on the farm, though he's barely a man. There's not much to do, but he does what he can. He sits by his window in his room by the stairs, watching the waves drifting soft on the pier. You gonna sing it with me, Greg? Sonny, don't go away.
Go on.
It's here all alone. Your daddy's a sailor, never came home. Nights are so long, the silence goes on, and I'm feeling so tired and not all that strong. Sonny, don't go away.
Well done, David. And that's all the frogs cleared. So there's not going to be no frogs in the clannery.
Very early in the morning, isn't
it? I know it is. Your voice hasn't even woken up yet.
I haven't even woken up yet. Never mind.
Like, I mean, it does make you have woken up. It does make perfect sense, though, because you're tuned in. But I used to do like the Saturday morning show and stuff, and I was always full of musicians who come in. And come in and perform in the morning because there's muscle memory and all that. Listen, you want to get a bit of snot in your throat. It's no big deal. But anyway, listen, thanks, David. Good luck. This weekend, the Clannery, big nights, big afternoons. Enjoy it. And don't forget, that's going to be a really special show, I think, next Thursday night in the Millennium Forum in Derry. It's David and his band, as you know them, but also too, sort of in a different environment and maybe something of a different tone, but enough there that you recognise that you'll really love it. Thanks, David.
Thanks, Greg.
It's Chris Ashmore. Good morning to you.
Good morning to you, Greg.
We're looking forward to the Business Matters podcast, which is live today. What's coming up?
Well, busy episode coming up for this week. Two parts of it. The first part, I've been speaking to Lee Hunter, who is a marine biologist and owner of Oystreak Éilean Crone in Dunloe, which is an oyster farm. And he has been involved in developing what's known as the oyster pitch. Now, this is using artificial intelligence to use sound to find out if an oyster shell, if the oyster is dead or alive when it's going through the production process, because they have to sort them out. So he has teamed up with the backing of Enterprise Ireland, ATU Letterkenny here as well, and is also looking at what could have a project that could have considerable export potential. And he's very excited about what's in store. And we've a little clip here as he explains what it's all about.
It's maybe not even oyster farms. All shellfish have this same sort of concept that a living shellfish is closed tight. It holds the water inside so it can breathe. A dead one is when it has weakened and it cannot hold its two shells together. So the concept works on all shellfish. So I don't see it being restricted to Ireland or even our closest biggest trading partner being France. I don't see it being a problem going all across Europe, and I don't see it being a problem leaving it just as oysters. It's very, very sad to know that in Ireland, I like to make the analogy that we produce the Wagyu of the oyster world, and no one knows about it. It's a real shame. They're absolutely amazing quality oysters coming out of Ireland, and they mainly all get exported.
Indeed. Well, we could perhaps be eating more of them. Have you? But no.
Are you an eater? No.
Yeah. No. But listen, I can. It's up to. I see people eating them, and they don't eat them; they just swallow them.
Yes.
So I don't really understand what's going on.
I've never had one, so can't say on it.
I mean, if you're not prepared to chew what you're eating, I would question. But anyway, Lee and others big into them, and it makes an awful lot of sense in terms of production, takes out the guesswork, and if they can get it 100% accurate or very close to it, they're going to do well.
Absolutely, and his own firm, which has the oysters in Dunloe Bay, they have had a tenfold increase in their output from 5 million tonnes to 10 million tonnes. And he has now 4 full-time employees, 3 part-time, and is continuing to expand.
Brilliant stuff. More on the podcast and also to recognising Local Enterprise Week.
Now, Local Enterprise Week, this is an annual event. It runs from March the 2nd to the 6th, so a little bit of advance notice on this. The launch took place last Friday of their brochure, which highlights many of the things that are taking part. All the events are free. They're scattered throughout the county. So if you go onto the Local Enterprise website, you can find details there. I went along to the launch. I spoke with the Cathaoirleach of Donegal County Council, Councillor Paul Canning, who performed the official launch of the brochure, the Chief Executive of the Council, John McLaughlin, and we have a clip here from Brenda Hegarty, who's Head of Enterprise at the Local Enterprise Office.
Micro and small businesses are so important in Donegal and right across the county, from north to south, east to west. Every small community is dependent on small businesses. So this is a great opportunity to shine the light on the importance of the small businesses and then give them an opportunity to come out, maybe lift the head, opportunity to network with other like-minded businesses, but also to hear from experts and come away with maybe some new ideas that they could implement, or indeed connect with different agencies and see what supports are out there, whether that's training and education, whether it's through grant or mentoring support through the Local Enterprise Office. So there's a wide range of agencies, and Local Enterprise Week is the ideal opportunity for businesses to hear what supports are there, to connect with other business people, and to learn and transfer that learning back into their businesses.
Okay, this week's podcast, the Business Matters podcast from Highland Radio, going live for you very shortly, available for you to listen to whenever you wish. It's also available for you on Spotify and iTunes, and it's a series that you can subscribe to and take the guesswork out of it. You'll just get a notification, a little dot on the podcast when there's a new episode there, and also, of course, the back catalogue. Chris, it's also on the radio?
Also on the radio, it's on Sunday after the 6 o'clock news.
Chris, thank you so very much indeed for calling into us. That is Chris Ashmore there. Now, just time for a couple of comments as we wrap the show up. Hi, babes. Greg, that comes from Kevin. Kevin, I don't mind you calling me babes. I'm just wondering, is that part of the show that we're about to talk about? Hi, babes, stroke Greg. After watching the very funny new show from Lisa McGee, where all mysteries start in Donegal, then you can keep the place a secret. How to get to heaven from Belfast falls between two stools. Neither comedy or murder mystery. It's a farce. The Dara character is nuts. Is that good? Is that bad? I don't know. On the issue of chicken, if you get chicken from a takeaway, nuggets, goujons, fillets, the chicken you get comes from a vista. Or Big Al's, both come from Thailand and Brazil. Nothing wrong with the meat. That's just where it comes from. We can't say across all takeaways, of course, but Big Al's, very popular. You see the bags knocking about the place, don't you? We must breed an awful lot of chickens in this country if you think about it. Recalms in Kerry. Some time ago, I decided to foster and was told that the child coming to me was on one tablet a day and melatonin to help them sleep. When the child arrived, I googled the one tablet a day to see what it was and the side effects, only to discover it was an antidepressant with the most horrible side effects of suicide and insomnia. I was horrified, and I think the whole issue is not just in Kerry and needs to be looked at wider across the country. Many of these children who find themselves in foster homes are being handed out these very serious medicines like sweets. I wonder, would under no circumstances give my own children this medication, never mind anyone else's, but who is their voice? who is advocating for them. They just get labelled troubled children. And I understand where you're coming from, but some of those antidepressants at certain dosages, whilst once you initially take them, suicide and insomnia can be some of the side effects. I think they can settle down. But I do take your point and I appreciate your feedback. And that is where we leave it on the show today. Thank you so much to all of you who listened, who watched the show, texted, or whatever you did. We really appreciate all your interactions. And we're back with you tomorrow morning at 9.